Blog Talk Radio.
Who's that lady?
Anna!
Stop, listen, it's a Real McCoy show. Stop, listen, it's a Real McCoy show. Who's that lady?
Anna!
The Real McCoy! Stop, listen, it's a Real McCoy show. Stop, listen, it's a Real McCoy show. Who's that lady?
Anna!
The Real McCoy!
Hurry, come and listen, it's a Real McCoy show.
Hurry, come and listen, it's a Real McCoy show. Hurry, come and listen, it's a Real McCoy show. The Real McCoy!
Hurry, come and listen, it's a Real McCoy show.
Hurry, come and listen, it's a Real McCoy show.
Hurry, come and listen, it's a Real McCoy show.
The Real McCoy!
All right, welcome to the show. You're listening to Anna, the Real McCoy, your coach, helping you to achieve your very best in life. Today we're talking about financial infidelity. One of the things we do is relates to Woman Act Now. This is Woman Act Now Radio, and our whole passion is to empower women to begin to dream again, to believe in themselves, to execute on their ideas, and to connect with other like-minded individuals. And we're talking about financial infidelity because what we do is we talk about a particular subject matter every single month. And in doing so, we're really training our women to be better at who they are, to be better not only in their finances, to be better in their businesses, to be better in their relationships, to be better at communicating with other people. So I'm really excited about today's topic. It's an interesting topic when we talk about financial infidelity. What does that mean? We hear the word infidelity as when it relates to relationships where there's sexual immorality. But the reason, one of the reasons for this show is that my husband and I, we have taught about finances for the last 6 to 8 years, in really educating and empowering individuals and enriching their lives and holding them really responsible to their financial destiny by really enlightening them or teaching them principles that can really help them to begin to build generational wealth as they have become more conscious of their financial situation. So we got an email, and this really sparked the interest in this particular discussion, which is also important because I think that as we are dealing with the recession in the economy, and we're certainly experiencing the pinch of high gas prices, energy prices, the issues that are going on in the real estate industry from the interest rates, not necessarily interest rates. We're really talking about those individuals who are currently in mortgages and got these, purchased their homes maybe 3 to 5 years ago, had adjustable rate mortgages, they're coming due, and the increase in the interest rates are just too much. So there are a lot of pressures in the environment that may cause individuals to behave and to begin to act in a way that's really unexpected. And so what we want to deal with today is financial dishonesty. Financial infidelity, because it's a destroyer of dreams, of relationships, and of opportunity. So we're going to be talking about in this show learning how to spot the causes, recognize the behaviors, and execute solutions that will turn your financial situation around. I'm excited because we also are going to have a guest with us, a certified public accountant, Karen Gente. I told Catherine I was going to tear up her name. Now, I was practicing before the show, but Catherine is going to be joining us, and she is a certified public accountant. She's going to join us the second half of the show because I'm going to talk about, during the first half of this show, what financial infidelity is, what the causes may be, and I've talked about some of the pressures that we're experiencing in the marketplace right now. So we also had gotten an email that really sparked this whole idea of financial infidelity. And the question was, my spouse is committing financial infidelity. Can you help? And this came from a visitor of our website. And so what I want to talk about is when we talk about infidelity, according to one of Webster's dictionary definition, is infidelity is unfaithfulness to a moral obligation or marital unfaithfulness or an instance of it. So we usually use this word in the context when we're talking about marital relationship. Financial infidelity or a lack of loyalty or faithfulness to financial obligations in your marital relationship can be as devastating as sexual betrayal. And after the many years of being out on the road, training and educating individuals, we've written a book called Building Generational Wealth, and we hear the many stories of individuals who make decisions by themselves without considering all parties involved, and it's very devastating on a relationship. It's also devastating on a business relationship. So it's not always just your marital union that can suffer from financial infidelity. It can be any relationship that you have that can keep you from really performing and being the best that you can be in this area of finances. So we want to deal with this because money is really a very tough topic to discuss, and unfortunately, it is a necessary topic to discuss for a successful financial relationship. And in Woman Act Now, we talk about helping individuals to really understand and maximize their influence and their relationships in their circles of influence. So as a result of that, taking care of this financial relationship is a very top priority for the women of Woman Act Now, and certainly hopefully for those listeners who are listening to this show. So we'll talk about financial discord. You know, when we talk about leading causes of divorce, separation of people just leaving, even when it comes to partnerships and business, the leading cause of divorce is financial discord. And what the person may have been asking is, how can I talk to my spouse about their finances, from this individual who actually sent us this email on financial infidelity, rather than just saying that person's committing financial infidelity. When we talk about financial discord, I think they were really asking this question that you know what, this is hurting me in the way that my spouse or my partner deals with finances, and I really need some help on how to deal with it. And I think the best way to help one to understand financial infidelity is to identify the causes, the behaviors, and provide a course of action for an individual to turn the situation around. And that's why Catherine will be joining us later in this show in helping us with those solutions. And there's some very specific steps that we can take to be more successful when it comes to achieving our financial goals. But let's start talking about some of the causes, and feel free to give us a call if you'd like to be on the show. You can call in to the show, and the call-in number is 718-664-6402. That is so funny, but it's 718-664-6402 for you to call in, and you can join us with any questions, or you can join the chat online and send your questions there as well. So I think we have a guest who may be listening, and we want to welcome you to Woman Act Now Radio. And if you have any questions, please send them. If you want to send them through the chat, you can do that as well. And I'd like to welcome Mindy to another listener who has joined us. And if you have any questions about this, we're talking about financial infidelity. We want to help you today. So I'm going to start talking about some of the causes. And again, that call-in number is 718-664-6402. Or you can send me a message. I'll see that instant message on the website. So one of the causes of financial infidelity is simply poor financial decisions or poor financial choices in your now. Woman Act Now is really all about you becoming very conscious and purposeful and intentional in your now. And many individuals make poor financial choices now that ultimately affect a future now. Give you some examples. is that an individual may not plan properly for paying their rent or paying their car note, and they're not really thinking about it, but they're not thinking about the fact that, let's say they go out and they entertain, they have friends, they go out to dinner a couple of times, and it really wasn't a planned event, but those are choices that have been made. So now, by the end of the month, they're in a place where they would have had enough money to meet their obligations, that now, because of those choices that they made, that dinner and all of the entertainment, the different things that they did, now, today, in this now, they're faced with a crisis and with a problem. So we have to become women that will be more conscious about our choices and our decisions. We got to look down the road to see how one action is going to react or cause another action to occur in our lives. Another cause is that in relationships, couples want to avoid confrontation and they want to avoid conflict. So when we talk about some of the solutions, my friend Catherine, she's going to be talking about giving you ways in which you can communicate and talk to your partner to be more effective. And I think one of the most powerful things that you can do is really just attack finances, just hit it right square in the face, develop your language about finances with your partner so that you can understand each other. I had a client, a financial coaching client, who called me. In fact, she called me about starting her own business, and I was like, okay. My very first question was, what are your finances like? She says, oh, I think my finances are fine. I said, uh-oh, what do you mean? And she was married. She says, well, I've been married 25 years, and I've never, ever sit down with my husband and talked about money. He lets me have my own money. He makes more money than I do, and he's the one responsible for paying the house note and all those things. I don't do that. I use my money for what I want to use my money for. And I asked her, I said, is your husband in agreement with you starting this business? She was quiet for a moment, and she says, I don't really think so. And I said, well, why? And she says, well, I don't know. I think he thinks I might spend too much money. I said, well, I think one of the things that you should do is go back and talk with your husband. Now, I want you to know something, audience, as you're listening to this, having these conversations are not very easy, but not having them are certainly some of the causes of finding yourself in a situation where you're experiencing this unfaithfulness in your marriage or your relationship concerning money. So what happened to this client is, you know, over the course of the next week, I was supposed to talk to her, but she canceled because she's still working on this financial thing. She sent me an email. She says, we're battling. Do you hear me? We're fighting about this. I mean, I think we're going to get a divorce. I said, uh-oh, coaching wasn't so effective. But really what she was experiencing, as she later shared with me, is the pain. It was so much pain behind this confrontation and this conflict because after 25 years they had not discussed their finances. And guess what, ladies? You would not believe this, and perhaps you would. Her husband, after they got through all of that stress and the strain and the pain of it, her husband was so grateful that they finally broke that barrier that they could begin to talk about their finances as a couple and as a team and not as individuals. Because what he was experiencing for the last several months, and this is what, you know, we can call this a part of financial infidelity because people don't actually communicate with us, is what they found themselves when they sat down, every penny she made, he needed to help to support their household. He had his children who were grown. They were in college. He had one daughter in medical school. They had a home in California, and, you know, prices are fairly high there. And he was trying to pay all of those bills by himself. And as a result of them sitting down, she said he just cried because he talked about the pressure that he felt that he was under and that it was only his responsibility. And her attitude was that he should just take care of it. And I'm telling you, the result of that client and her husband coming together, their marriage has never been better. In fact, it has sparked something much, much greater in their marriage, and this is 2 years later. And remember that conversation, that email, I think we're going to get a divorce. Well, they're not getting a divorce. They're still together. So I want to welcome Just Talk Now to the to our listening audience. Feel free to send me any of your text, email messages, or you can call in to the show at 718-664-6402. If you do decide to call in, I'm going to recognize you as the caller based on your area code to invite you into the conversation. But I think this is just so awesome because so many of us are suffering. And so it, with this particular situation, you have to think about, are you avoiding confrontation and conflict from talking to your spouse or your partner about financial matters? If you are, then these, again, are the causes. Let's talk about poor communication skills. Sometimes people just don't know how to talk about money. They don't know. We have to think about, how were you raised? How did your parents speak about money? What were they thinking, for instance, when what was your culture like in your home when you talked about money among partners in your home? In my home, this is what it kind of sounds like. Mama, I need some money for a field trip tomorrow. And my mother would look at me and she'd say, go ask your daddy. Then I would go ask my daddy, and I said, Daddy, I need some money for a field trip. And he'd say, go ask your mama. And I said, now, y'all need to get in the same room because somebody's going to have to answer me eventually. I need the money for tomorrow's trip. But the point was, is it was obvious that that type of communication, that there was no cohesiveness or an understanding of what they even had. And we're talking probably very small dollars, probably less than $20, but because they probably did not have a full understanding of what their budget was, then as a result, they sent us back and forth, and that continued. That continued. I see Just Talk Now. Your mama and daddy used to do the same thing. They responded in a chat message, I know too. And so as a result, we have to really think about how were we taught, because however we were taught, we're going to continue to bring those things into our relationship. The next one is lack of financial planning, and let me tell you, lack of financial planning, I think most of us, we get a little bit confused in this idea of financial planning because when we see, you know, the T-roll prices of the world, all of our different financial institutions, the Merrill Lynches of the world, we think financial planning for big, big folks and rather than us. And when we talk about financial planning, that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is thinking about whatever you have. You remember the formula is very simple. It is simply, it says, what it says is that income in, expenses out. And what do you have left over? That's most of our financial planning right there, is that what is your income, how much are you bringing in today, and how much do I have left over to then figure out what I'm going to do with it. So lack of financial planning is another cause for financial infidelity. The stress of managing money. Now, again, my guest is going to join us in about 10 minutes, and she's going to start talking about the solutions. How do we get past the causes and get to the solutions? And Catherine is going to be speaking to some of those issues. Another cause is lack of self-discipline. This whole idea that I need to get it right now, that it's on sale right now. I want to challenge you listeners to this. I want to challenge you to look around in your house. You know, one of our assignments to the women of Woman Act Now is looking at that inventory. Look around your house. Look in your office. Look in your car. Look everywhere. And find something you don't really need and try and sell it this week. Okay? Try and sell that. And you're going to do that consistently over a period of time. But the reason why I'm saying that, because most of us lack self-discipline. The other thing is, while you're looking around that room at all that stuff you had to have in that particular moment because it was on sale, girls, go in your closet. Get to your closet, okay? That will be enough for you. Just get to that closet and just stand up in there and look at all of that stuff you had to have. We find ourselves in these situations because we lack discipline and having to get it in the now. Another one is the pressure of producing income. You remember I shared with you that couple that I was coaching, I started that coaching assignment as a business assignment, But you can't get to the business or the dream or the idea until you deal with the finances. And so the husband was under the pressure of producing income. Now, if you have a job, that's pretty much it. And if your income does not exceed your expenses, you've got to create some other kind of revenue stream. If you don't get a job, if you don't sell something, where are you going to get the money? And so when we find ourselves under the pressure of producing income but don't have the time, we start to do some other things, and I'm going to talk about those behaviors. We also, one of the causes, unfulfilled expectations, is that, you know, you're in this thing with in your relationship, and maybe you have a spouse that hasn't worked in a while. You know, there's unfulfilled expectations, so you feel like you owe something to yourself. And so we start to behave in a way that will certainly show these particular signs. And then, of course, spousal resentment is another one of the causes, wanting to control money, feelings of lack, the ease of acquiring credit. Now, of course, that ease of acquiring credit on mortgages is a little tightened, but some of the other opportunities when we talk about credit cards and different things, I got a call from one of our members this week, and she talked about her applying for credit cards. Her credit score wasn't that great. She had a lot of new accounts and had applied for Visa and MasterCard, and I said, well, have you tried American Express Open? She said, well, no, I never even thought about it because I didn't think I'd get approved. Well, she called them, and guess what? She gets approved. So it's the ease of credit or acquiring credit. Also, the access to cash. These ATMs, I mean, they got to be running you crazy, too. How do you manage? Oh, I came across a great business the other day. I'm going to have to remember it because it was a business that allows you, every time you spend a dime, you call into the phone number, you tell them what the amount was, and it keeps an ongoing account of your every single dime you spend. So, like, when you run up to the ATM machine, you don't remember to write that down, you don't remember to do something, you just call a message on your cell phone, and it gives you a running total. I mean, instantaneously on the Internet for you to see exactly where your money is going. So I bet you that's something everybody's interested in. Then I need to talk about it and figure out which one of those companies it was. And also impulsive buying decisions are another cause of financial infidelity. And here's the challenge. You know, when you hide your financial behavior, eventually it's going to come back and bite you. It's going to put you under the tremendous pressure of trying to carry this whole deception, you know, to carry it over long periods of time, and eventually it'll show up. You know, every time you make a financial choice that is not of integrity, it's like you're planting mines in a field. And guess what? Eventually you're going to start walking over those same areas and not have remembered where you planted that mine, and it's going to explode. And that's where we start to see those explosions start to look like the loss of a home, the loss of cars, the loss of possessions due to one or both of the spouses' misuse or poor financial management. So some of those behaviors, what do you think we act like? If you're on the chat, you can answer this question. What are some of the behaviors of individuals who are committing financial infidelity in a relationship? Well, I'll tell you, they're very similar to those that are committing sexual infidelity in a relationship or moral or emotional infidelity. One of the things we do is we lie about what we make, what we spend, and what we save. I want to welcome Think Ness, who's listening in to us today. Welcome to the show. If you got any questions, we're talking about financial infidelity and talking about the behaviors, the signs that you can spot. You might be a person yourself who's committing financial infidelity, but if you are, we're going to give you some solutions in order to change that situation around, or if you're with a spouse who might be having these types of behaviors. But feel free to ask us any questions, and we're glad you're listening today. So, again, we talk about what are those behaviors. We make financial decisions based on self-fulfillment. That means what's in it for me? You know, we don't look at a person who's committing financial infidelity isn't looking at how their choices are going to affect what's going to happen at the end of the month, or you know, if I go out and I buy me, you know, 5 pair of new shoes when I don't need any of them and it costs me $200, they don't look at how that's going to affect them being able to pay their electric bill or their water bill or buying gas. Need we say that? I mean, who's choosing a cup of Starbucks coffee over a $4 gallon of gas when you got to go to work? I'm pretty sure you're like me that I'm not drinking Starbucks, okay? I'm putting some gas in the car. So we're going to be having our guests join us shortly. Some of the other behaviors are you have an open affair with material wealth. Things on the outside really stimulate you. You know, maybe you want to look a certain way. You want to drive a certain car. You want to go to certain places. But all of these are signs of financial infidelity. In addition, we have you care more about you than about what matters to your spouse. Again, you care about more about what's going on with you than what matters to your spouse. And what you want to start to think about as things start to come up, you have to, what's in this? If you can answer that question or you're asking that question, what's in it for me, then you might want to see that alarm clock actually start to come up. You have a never-can-get-enough attitude. We need this. We got to have this. You know, it's on sale. We can't live. I've been waiting for this for 6 months. I've been waiting for this a year. And not really looking at your total financial situation. You feed a physical, emotional, or financial habit. Now, it could be any of those. You know, I've had women, when we're talking about the Internet, that's a whole world out there. And one of the things, you can't transact pretty much anything on the Internet without having a credit card in which that business, if it's a recurring type of business, they want you to have a recurring fee in order to gain access. So we have to begin to look at what are those behaviors, what are those feelings, what are those emotions, what are those habits we have that we're feeding. And one of the things I want to encourage all of us to do is to check all of our subscriber accounts. You would be amazed how they begin to add up, and not only just a few $100s, but some of us are in the thousands as it relates to these monthly amounts being paid over a certain amount of time spread over a number of different people. If you're very defensive when you are confronted about money, ask yourself this question. Why am I responding this way? Are you hiding something? I mean, why can't we just talk about this? What's uncomfortable about this for you? So you want to ask those questions. If you start to see these behaviors in an individual when they were pretty open about it, then you might want to raise your red flag. A misuse or misappropriation of funds. Then there's a real problem here, and if it's consistently happening where this person is not being a person of their word and they're continually violating, then you want to raise the red flag. What about hiding the mail or hiding bills from your spouse? Now, ladies, let me tell you something about this one. When I first got married, my husband just looked like he threw all the bills in my lap. It's not because I'm so talented. It's because he was really busy, or felt as if he was more busy than I was, and it would be my responsibility to take care of all these bills. So early on in our marriage, he gave me a mortgage bill to pay, and he went off on a trip for a couple of weeks, and he came back, and it was still on the counter. And he says to me, "Well, what happened?" I said, "I didn't have no stamps." Do you know, my husband was so angry at me. Because he is such a man of his word, he also understood the value of paying his bills on time and ahead of time. And when I married him, you know, my credit wasn't that great anyhow. You know, he had good credit, and I didn't have, you know, so good credit. And when we bought our first house shortly after we were married, he asked me, he says, "Well, what's your Social Security number?" I said, "You don't want to know that." I said, "In fact, you don't even want to put my name on it." So when it became my responsibilities, oh, it was so much pressure for me to be able to pay these bills on time because, you know, my credit score wasn't that great. I did not have very good financial habits. In fact, I totally avoided it. And I think I certainly had some of the signs and the behaviors of a person who would be committing infidelity in this financial infidelity in the relationship because I used to hate for him to see these bills, you know, so I put in my bag. You know them bags we got, ladies. Look in your bag right now. What bill do you have in there that you should have paid that you didn't have any stamps? And so I would hide the bills, make sure he ain't see it, but not because we couldn't pay it, because we could pay it. It's because I just wasn't very organized. Another cause or behavior that you could recognize is if you've been in a relationship where you've really shared a lot of things, you pretty much share everything, but you don't have an attitude that this is mine and I can do what I want with my money attitude, and you start to see that, red flag, just put it up, ladies, of the behavior of a person who may be committing financial infidelity in the relationship. Also, open credit accounts without telling your spouse. When was the last time you saw two or three credit cards you knew nothing about? Please beware. Beware of when you see things like that because what's happening, you know, you can marry debt. Just like when my husband said I do, he married a little bit of debt. Okay, I've since then gotten my credit much, much better. I'm a prime credit candidate. I'm much more disciplined. I'm very focused, but you got to find the tools that can help you. My tools were online banking and all of that stuff. That works for me, doing auto pay and different things like that, so it could keep me from having to put a stamp on an envelope. So you have to find the thing that really works for you. And also a person that really keeps debt hidden. If you're in a new relationship, you need to be asking, what's your credit score? And by the way, when's the last time you pulled that credit report? I'd like to, you know, go over it with you because the credit report will actually show you how, oh, thank you, Think Nest. It is Expense Tracker. Expense Tracker is the company that I was talking about. Absolutely. That's the company. So Think Nest knew which company that was. For you listeners, is it expensetracker.com? And you can just confirm that for me. Think Ness, and I'll give that information again. But thank you very much. But that's awesome because that was very important. Again, here's another behavior: a partner refusing to get a job. Surely somebody wants to give me a call and talk about your partner who hadn't worked. Yes, and again, that address is theexpensetracker.com. So that's the company that you want to call if you really want to get a handle on these finances and figure out exactly what you're spending. So you will know where your money is going. So I shared with you that we're going to have a guest coming on the show, and that's Catherine Karen Gente. You know, me and Catherine went over her name several times before the call today, and I've known Catherine. Something's wrong with my brain. Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I tell you, I was practicing, girl, before the show. How could I have not gotten this right? It's like the Serengeti. Okay, I want to introduce you to my dear friend, actually. She is also a member of Woman Act Now. Her name is Catherine Karen Gente. She is a certified public accountant working for a private equity firm. She graduated from Texas A&M University, earning a bachelor's degree in professional accounting and also an MBA. After getting into credit card debt in college, what we just talked about, Catherine became highly interested in understanding money and financial matters. Catherine is passionate about empowering and removing financial roadblocks for individuals to learn economic principles to achieve their financial destiny. Catherine is also married, and she resides here in the Dallas metro area with her husband. And I'd like you all to join with me in welcoming her to the show. And she is going to be talking about some of the solutions, like all of these things that I've talked about when we talk about what are the causes, poor financial choices, unfulfilled expectations, pressures of producing income. She's going to give us some solutions that will help us to get past this and begin to turn the financial relationship around. So, Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Anna. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well,
go ahead.
Let me tell you, I'm excited that you're here with us today because I certainly honor and respect what you're doing, and certainly our interactions over the past couple of years and your passion for financial empowerment continues to grow, and certainly even as you're working in this field. But what I think is so important is the first step in finding a solution is a person that is committing the offense really has to accept that they are doing something wrong, that they're hurting their marriage. So I want you to think about how could we begin to rebuild trust if we're that offending spouse?
Well, trust is, you know, financial trust is just like any other trust in a marriage. And when that trust is broken, whether it's broken because of other marital issues or finances, it's broken and you have to rebuild that. And the offending spouse has to be accountable. They have to be willing first to accept that they have done something wrong and it is hurting their marriage. And then they to rebuild that trust, they will need to be honest and very open about their financial dealings going forward. And I believe that as the spouse sees them making an effort, they will start to also, you know, forgive them. But the truth is, both parties have to be willing to forgive each other, and especially the offended spouse, they have to be willing to forgive. But the truth is, it's a slow process. Rebuilding trust can be a slow process, but as the offending spouse, you have to be patient and just let time heal the wounds.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Now, share with me also some other ways in which we can begin to turn this situation around from no communication to perhaps some communication to really doing a 360 on some of the causes of financial infidelity. What could we do?
You see, one of the big reasons why you have financial infidelity is a lack of communication. You talked about how what we are taught, what we saw about money growing up tends to shape our perspective. If our parents never talked about money or they always thought about money, that shapes our perspective about money. So it is really important for couples to talk about money, to really communicate, because in communicating, that's when they understand each other. That's when they see, my spouse is having the pressure of, you know, having to bring home the bread. And that's how the other spouse then gets to see, this is what's going on. And they become more understanding. And so when they come to the table and they talk about it, and they talk, each spouse gives their perspective as they talk about money, they are able to then they are able to start to merge those perspectives about money. And it's really important that people plan ahead and listen to one another. We tend to kind of write off other people's perspectives or tend to write off, that's dumb or we shouldn't do that. I think it's really important for couples to really listen to one another and, you know, when they come to solutions, come to an agreement, but that's going to happen when they listen to one another.
So when we're talking about, when you're saying coming together, we're also talking about developing a financial vision. One of the words that was most disliked among the many attendees is when you speak the word budget, everybody just kind of cringes because it feels like you're taking something from me or you're withholding something from me. And so what do you think we could do when we talk about our financial perspectives and developing a vision, a financial vision?
Well, Anna, one of the best ways for a couple to converge their financial perspectives is actually to create a financial vision. Make time to talk about your hopes, the dreams, you know, what we want in our future. You see, let me talk a little bit about myself. My husband and I had a very difficult time talking about money because we also had different perspectives. I came from the perspective that you talk about it even if you're going to fight about it. My husband came from the perspective, you know, you don't talk about money. He deals with his own money. I deal with my own money. So that was difficult. But you know what? Once we started talking about our dreams, our hopes, where we wanted to go in the future as far as financially, those perspectives go away because now you have one shared vision. So it's really when you have a shared vision, when you talk about your dreams, what it does is really it starts to converge those perspectives. It starts to converge. So now you end up having a shared system or values about your money because you want to go in one direction. And then the other thing, and let me just give some examples about that, is, for example, if you know, you might decide that your dream is to send your children to college debt-free, that they may come out of college without college debt, you know, or you might decide that you want to pay off your mortgage, your house mortgage at a certain time, or, you know, you want to retire early and travel the world, whatever it is. But having a shared vision is one of the best things a couple can do about their finances.
Well, let me tell you, one of the powerful things you just shared with us is that talking about your finances with your spouse was very difficult, but when you started sharing your dreams and your hopes and the ideas of where you wanted to be in the future, something shifted. And that shift is now we both can see eye to eye. We both can see what our values are, what's really important to us, and then we start redirecting how we spend our money. So let's talk about some other solutions for turning this situation around. How do we really, you talked about this, you know, when we dream, these could kind of be some of our ideas, but how do we really put them into financial goals?
Okay, you see, okay, you can have a dream. You can say, I want to send my college to my student, my child to college debt-free. But now, okay, you have to put that into action steps. And that's why your financial goals come into play. Because now you're going to say, my child is 4 years old, and they'll be in college when they're 18. So I have 14 years to get the, you know, to save up some money so that they can go to college debt-free. So then that means, okay, how much do I think college will be at that time? And then breaking that down to, okay, I need to be putting away $200 a month. And to create some financial goals, you know, there's a lot of financial advisors, financial planners out there, and you mentioned about that. And that if one is not able to do it on their own, one can consult with a financial advisor and so that they can break it down to you like, okay, you need to be putting away $200 a month into this account, and it's going to compound at a certain interest rate. And when it does that, or it will grow at a certain rate, and when your child is 18, you will have enough money to send your child to college. So, and that's where your financial goals come in. So in you might say, I want to put, you know, $500 in my 401k every month. I want to put $100 in my children's child college account, you know, per month. So you start to create those goals. And as you do that, one of the best things to do is every few months, go back and look at those goals. Go back and look at your vision. Go back and, you know, talk about those dreams again, because that keeps you energized and focused on your goal. And you always, you know, every 2 months you're excited. Oh, you look at your account, you see, oh, we now have $5,000 towards our child's college education. And that excites you. And, you know, that then starts to take away the need for buying those shoes, you know. So when you're in that store and you look at those shoes and you love those red pumps, you remember, oh, you know what, I need to put that $200 for my child's education. And that will kind of keep you in shape in terms of staying focused in your goals.
So then now that we have goals, then we want to talk about also how can we create a spending plan, because one of the causes is that we have poor financial planning and identified that not in the sense of planning for our retirement, putting away annuities and all of those type of things. I'm talking about just planning the current income that we receive in and the expenses that go out of our home. So how do we develop a spending plan?
You see, the good thing is that now when you have financial goals, it makes it much easier to have a spending plan. Because the problem I see is that a lot of people start with a spending plan, and as you were talking about earlier, the spending plan looks like, okay, this is how much we brought in, this is how much you spent. okay? And but now when you have goals and you know, okay, for me to reach my dream, I need to have put $500 into my 401k. I need to put $200 to that child's education. So then you're able to put everything into place. It's easier to say, okay, fine. It means that we are not going to spend so much on eating out, you know, or it starts to shape up your spending plan, because now your spending plan has to reflect your financial goals. And such a spending plan is much easier to stick to. It's much easier to commit to, you know, to your budget, to your, you know, lunch budget or your household budget, when you know that at the end of the day, at the end of the year, I am going to see progress in our financial lives.
Oh, wow. That's good. All right. And what about one of the issues that we've certainly dealt with is personal spending, trying to determine how individuals can – how do you manage the relationship? You have one person that spends a lot more than the other person spends. So how do we manage that process? Because I hear a lot of painful stories of individuals who they have shared checking accounts and they don't know what the other spouse is doing and find themselves where there's NSS, there's closed accounts. Now, you know, I'm on check systems for the next 5 years to eternity. How do we deal with some of these situations?
Well, one of the, again, you know, flowing from the fact that now you have a spending plan, it is wise to have a household account and a personal spending account, because what it does then, now you, based on your spending plan or your budget, you can take the money for your household, put it in your household account, meaning that your mortgage is in that account, your light bill, your electric bill, your gas bill is in that account. Therefore, somebody is not going to be dipping into that your household account to buy shoes. So, and then when you can have separate accounts for personal spending, where you know you will communicate about what you're doing. But there's a couple of things that I have seen that work really well, because as you said, different people are coming to the table to marriage with different perspectives about money, and because of that, people tend to feel locked in. And some of the reasons you see those habits, as you were talking about, is because people feel like, you know, I want these shoes. I haven't had, you know, I deserve them. And so one of the things, one of the ways that I've seen work really well as far as that is concerned is having a dollar limit. For example, let's say you cannot spend more than $100 without telling the other spouse. So you're not going to spend more than $100 out of your personal spending account without telling your spouse. That works well, because then the other person will always know. And if it's something that is important to you, they probably will agree. But it ensures that everybody is on the same page as far as your finances is concerned. Another option, another way I've seen it done, is you do your spending plan, and you decide that every month each one of you gets $100 or whatever, whichever amount you decide on. But I'll just use $100 as an example. So you, and you can each have separate personal spending accounts. So you get $100 to put in your personal spending account. You can do whatever you want to do with that $100. You want to buy shoes, you want to save it, whatever you want to do with it. Your spouse will not interfere with it. And that sometimes gives people a little bit of freedom. So they won't feel so caged in, especially if you have, you know, been single for a long time and were used to making all your financial decisions, and now you're having a hard time having to tell your, you know, your spouse, this is what I'm going to do with this, because you're used to making those decisions on your own. So having a personal spending account and have some money deposited in that account every month makes you feel, you know, like you have a little bit more freedom towards your money.
Well, I tell you, it certainly is painful making that transition. And many couples, actually, their experience in their early marriage is usually threatened by financial infidelity, because they don't know how to get through that merge crisis. So if that were the case, are there any type of counseling or financial something that if I were in this situation and was really suffering from financial infidelity, I was aware of it, My spouse and I talked about it, but we just don't seem to be getting anywhere. What can we do then? Is there what would you suggest?
Well, I think there are two reasons. There are two reasons why we get into financial infidelity, or two reasons why we have poor spending habits. One is because we just simply don't know. We don't have the knowledge. The other is sometimes we have some underlying personal issues that have absolutely nothing to do with money, but are manifesting themselves in our money.
Yes.
So you have to first identify what is my problem. If the problem is that you have personal issues, then the best thing to do is go see a counselor. Let them deal with your personal issues so that those issues stop manifesting themselves in your money. But, okay, the other alternative is somebody doesn't know. You don't know that spending that $200 on your credit card that is charging you 19%, you know, will end up costing you $1,000. That shoe will end up costing you $1,000 if you just pay, you know, the minimum. So that lack of knowledge, because sometimes what you don't know may be hurting you. And so if it's an issue of lack of knowledge, then I would advise, as a couple, go to a class, go to a seminar, or read a book. And there's a couple of books that I really like because they're very simply written, even for people who don't have a financial background. You know, Glenda Bridgeforth has three books out. One, and these books are not just for girls. They're titled Girl, Get Your Money Straight, but they're really not just for girls. Even guys can read them. There's Girl, Get Your Money Straight, Girl, Make Your Money Grow, and Girl, Get Your Credit Straight. I like these books, as I said, because they're easy. The language is easy to read and understand. So if the issue is lack of knowledge, then go get some knowledge. Read some books or go to a seminar. That's my recommendation. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Cheryl Broussard is another female author who talks about financial empowerment and is also a registered investment advisor. She's a co-author of What's Money Got to Do with It? One of the things she says in that particular book is that financial infidelity is when two people who are in a relationship are not on the same financial page. Now, I think that's a great description of financial infidelity as it relates to, regardless of the causes, the behaviors, or the solutions, when we find ourselves on two different pages, then we have some issues. And most of us start out that way. When we look at Bridezilla and the brides and this whole idea of getting married and what the industry has promoted this to be, and I'm amazed at the amount of money that people spend on their weddings without any understanding of financial awareness, you know. And so she says, if you're on the wrong page, two people who are supposed to be in a relationship, and you're on the wrong page, then you need to figure something out, because then we ought to be asking, what's money got to do with it? You know, the same thing we say, what's love got to do with it? It has everything to do with it, because when financial infidelity occurs in a relationship, it erodes the foundation of trust, and we've talked about that. You know, people get married. We marry because we want to feel safe. We want to be secure. We want to be protected by our spouse. And we're women who are talking, so naturally we may be talking about our husbands or vice versa, but we want to feel safe, and we want to be able to really release these opportunities into each other's hands. One of the things that I find so amazing is marriage is an amazing institution and union. I mean, when you think about it, you know, you talked a little bit about a single person being able to make all of their own financial decisions. And then, you know, in a matter of months or, you know, 12 months or 6 months, however long, then all of a sudden you're discussing your choices. Now, you may not quickly give over all of your access and your monies and different things. I think we have that holdout period. You know, let me hold out and keep some of my stuff about 2 or 3 years, make sure this thing really is going to work. But at the same time, it's really an interesting institution how we're in relationship with all these other people in our world, and then this one person comes in, and then they have such an intimate relationship in every area of our lives. And money is intimate for us because if we earn it, we work hard for it. We use it to make purchases, to do the things that we need to do. So I think it's really incredible for us to really come to that place where we can begin to really understand that financial infidelity can be more damaging than sexual infidelity, primarily because the effects can be long-term, meaning the damage to one's credit or financial well-being can have lasting effects. Because, you know, you can be in a relationship with an individual, and if it doesn't work out, you know, you go through a little pain and suffering and you move on. But when you're in a marital relationship and you decide that you want to stay, you want to depart, and you've had some financial infidelity, guess what? You take all that along with you. So it's been really a great show today. Catherine, I want to ask you, you have any other points that you want to leave our audience with before we close out the show today?
Not really, but what I would like to say actually is that when you have a shared financial vision, actually money can be exciting to talk about. It doesn't have to be a dreaded topic. It can be very fun because as you see progress in your finances, it's very exciting, and you just want to talk about money all the time because it's an exciting topic. It stops being something that's negative, and it can be something positive. And I wish all couples out there who might be going through this issue that I want to let them know that they can turn it around and make money fun.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that because you're absolutely right, because the more we see that our goals are being achieved, the more that we're going to we want to create more goals, because obviously we're achieving those and we want to see more fruition come in our lives. And that's really true, Catherine, is because some of the people, you know, when people start to get themselves on a budget, they start to find success in that budget. Then they start sharing with friends, oh, no, I'm on a budget, honey. I'm doing the financial piece. I'm doing the you know, they start letting you know, no, I'm not spending that because we got another vision. And you're absolutely right that conversation actually begins to change. So I want to thank you, Catherine, for being on the show. Would you, you can certainly give our listening audience an opportunity to get in touch with you, or if you have any other services that you might offer outside of what you're currently doing, working with the company that you're with, how you can be of service. Do you have any seminars, or what are you doing as it relates to fulfilling your dream of providing economic principles for others to achieve their financial destiny?
Well, I'm currently working on a website. And it's not ready right now, but I am working towards providing more information for people to, you know, do better with their finances and just to learn more and to provide knowledge and forums of exchange. So I'm working on that. And as of right now, people, if someone had a question, a financial question, or needed maybe financial service, because I am a certified public accountant and I do offer financial services to businesses and individuals.
Okay.
They can email me at Karingithe, that is my last name, which is KARINGITHI at hotmail.com.
Uh-huh. See, even Catherine had trouble saying her name, people. So, all right, Catherine, we really appreciate you being a part of the show, and you've been listening to Woman Act Now Radio. We've talked about financial infidelity. If your marriage is to survive, you must be willing to master the area of financial conflict as you walk together. So we hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any questions, you can send us an email, actnow.com. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
You know you need to get control of your finances, but like many people, you probably don't know where to start. That's why Anna McCoy and her husband Richmond have created a plan of action they call Building Generational Wealth. This easy-to-follow workbook contains step-by-step instructions that will enable you to understand and act to secure your financial future. You'll learn how to determine your net worth, reduce debt, manage your money, and even plan for retirement. Seize your financial future today. To order, simply visit annamccoy.com.
All right, we're signing off. This has been Woman Act Now Radio with your coach, Anna McCoy.